Welcome to Weekend Ag Matters on the Iowa Agribusiness Radio Network. I'm Dustin Huffman.
And I'm Anna Hofstert.
Yes, as you can see, Ken is not here this week. Actually, he's going to be gone for a couple episodes here, Anna. So they've actually left us in charge of running the ship here.
Yeah, that's really scary.
You know, I think we can handle it. I think we've got enough broadcasting experience. Nowhere near what Ken, even combined, we don't get nowhere near Ken. But I think we can limp through this with no problem.
Yeah, I agree. I'm not concerned about our inabilities to produce this weekend show, but. Still a little just scary that they actually trust us to put this together, you know?
You know, and if Ken and I can do this from Orlando last week, I think you and I should be able to do it in the studios this week.
Oh, definitely. I mean, you two are something else. You got to be managed from afar, basically.
Hey, but we didn't make you contribute anything last week, so that was like a vacation for you.
Yeah, it kind of was. Yeah, it was nice. I definitely appreciated the work that you two put in. Great segments that were pieced together last week, so kudos to you for tackling that in Orlando last week when you were also trying to cover Commodity Classic at the same time.
I bet that really hurt you giving us a compliment, huh?
Yeah, it really, really pierced my soul there, so.
Yeah, you know, and it was hard for me to come back from Orlando. I mean, coming back to my real job, and it was like an 83-degree difference from when I left Orlando to when I landed in Des Moines Friday night. It was a big, big difference. I don't know about you, but I'm getting sick of winter, and I'm ready for spring.
Man, you make it like you got it life rough here. It's you go from 80-degree weather back to Iowa. I sympathize for you. I really do, Dustin.
All right. So speaking of winter, we got some things to talk about and also with some stuff with spring coming up.
Yeah. Winter is still trudging on, like you mentioned previously. But spring is right around the corner. It will come eventually. We aren't really sure when. But a lot of things that farmers need to be paying attention to with winter still lingering on here. Some things they need to be keeping an eye out for. And then also just need to be making those preparations for spring and seeing how they can get the most out of their crops this season.
All right, well, let's go ahead and tell them a little bit about what's going on this lingering winter and what they can look forward into spring. If you're looking at your calendars, you can see that we're in the month of March. If you look outside, it looks a lot like March at the North Pole. I think the following comment has been heard in communities all across the upper Midwest.
For the love of God, stop snowing!
One YouTuber has even gone so far as to parody a song from a beloved children's film to voice her displeasure with the fluffy white stuff.
I hate snow, too much snow. For Christmas it's nice, but that's all. I hate snow. I hate snow. Why does winter have to come after fall? It's not cool when sub-zero is the norm and the storm rages on. Maybe it's time to move somewhere warm.
You know, it's been enough when children don't even want to play in the snow anymore. That's been the case at my own house. The desire to be able to run around and not slip and fall in 20 pounds of outerwear is becoming almost obsessive to my kids. Whether we like it or not, we are having to deal with it. Unfortunately, the heavy amounts of snow in some areas is causing problems for producers, especially on their roofs. During Commodity Classic, I heard reports from broadcasters all over the upper Midwest that sheds and barns are having their roof collapse under the weight. Members of my own family have had it happen to them. My uncle lost 2/3 of his hog barn roof. Thankfully, there were no animals in it at the time, but of course, maybe a barn full of hogs would have helped raise the heat levels and melted that snow on the roof. At any rate, farmers are having to look at ways to remove snow from their roofs. Extension agent Katie Wontok says inspecting your buildings should be one of your daily chores. Don't just assume that your building can take it.
It might not be able to withstand the amount of snow that we have. So, you know, really going out, looking at your buildings, where is the heaviest loads that are on there, especially if you've got animals in these barns, I think those probably rise to the highest priority versus just sheds with equipment in them.
Safety is the primary concern. If somebody must go up on the roof, make sure you're taking proper precautions.
Can you safely get up onto the roof? If you have a snow roof rake, that would be fantastic to start scraping some of that snow off of there. But if you are going up yourself or if you're sending employees up there, making sure that they wear some fall protection equipment, they're not falling off the roof, making sure if you've got a ladder that you're securing it and putting it where the snow is not going to be falling off. But yeah, just really trying to remove that snow from those most heavily loaded areas first, of course.
Lastly, do not resort to any foolish ideas to remove the snow, and also don't try and be a hero. There's no shame in getting help, especially with the amount of snowfall we're facing.
Don't get your snowblower up there on the roof and try and blow it off. But if you need to hire a company to come in with a lift or something like that, or maybe you know a farmer down the road that's got a lift, and can you get a portable heater into the shed to try and start melting off some of that snow in uninsulated sheds? Be safe about it and know what's best for oxygen and depletion, carbon monoxide accumulation in unventilated areas, making sure, again, you're being safe about those different things.
Again, the message is to be careful. You don't want to wind up hanging from the rain gutters like Clark Griswold in National Lampoon's Christmas Vacation. Before you know it, the snow will melt and we'll see green grass again. And before you know it, we'll be getting those tractors ready to plant.
Historically, Midwest growers have planted corn first. The reason Midwest growers have planted corn first for all this time is because soybeans usually need a little bit warmer soil temperatures. But a BASF Technical Services representative is actually challenging that theory. Recent research suggests that soybeans can actually withstand cooler soil temperatures. Mark Storr, who is Technical Services Representative with BASF in Iowa, talks about the recent research that's been conducted in regards to planting soybeans a little bit earlier, and he tells us how this actually works.
We got to keep in mind the way soybeans grow. They obviously can only produce blossoms and pods at the nodes, and so it really depends if you have a mid-group 3 soybean, which would be adapted here for central Iowa. If you plant it early, you know, we have a lot of vegetative growth. The plant will grow taller, and it will produce more nodes. So there's more places on the plant for that plant to set blossoms and then potential pods. If you plant late, due to the influence of light or sunlight exposure onto the plants, those plants will kick into reproductive activities quicker. And when they do that, they slow their vegetative production. So in essence, the later planted beans will be shorter, and they will produce significantly fewer number of nodes, which, again, are the places where we set flowers and pods. So that's really the advantage of the early planting.
Now, aside from the natural growth stages of soybeans, there's actually other benefits to planting soybeans about 2 weeks earlier than what we're normally used to. Mark provides a little bit more information on this.
Well, it stands to reason that the yield benefits are tied to the planting date as well, just like corn. I think everybody is entrenched and understands that to maximize our corn yield, we need to plant early. But it's the same with soybeans. When we look at the 10-year average yield for soybeans in Iowa, this is through 2017. We don't have the 2018 numbers yet, but the 10-year average is 51 bushel per acre for the state. The high was recorded in 2016, where the state averaged 60 bushel per acre. And the low, 2012, was 45 bushel per acre. So granted, over time, there's going to be some improvement of yield based on improved genetic potential with new varieties and new seeds. But overall, that's a pretty big swing. You know, that's basically a 15 bushel yield difference between the high and the low. And oftentimes, that will be influenced by when we were able to get in the field and get those soybeans planted. We know from our research in plots with some early planting experiments, for example, in central Illinois, where you may be looking at a typical planting window around, say, the end of April, 1st of May, by pushing some of those early plantings in March out there, they've actually produced whole fields of over 80 bushel per acre. And we know that the soybean plant has that potential to produce 90 to 100 bushels. We see this in some areas of the country, but we haven't taken advantage of that as much as we could have in Iowa. So it really is going to kind of vary a little bit by the part of the state that you're in. There is obviously a difference between northern Iowa, where we butt against the Minnesota border, versus southern Iowa, and even here in central Iowa. But I think if we take the opportunity to try to push that envelope a little bit, so if you're, let's say, normally looking at a May 1 planting or a May 15 planting, if that's your typical start date for planting soybeans, to consider pushing that window up a couple weeks if the soil conditions are conducive. You got to plant it in a good seed bed. We're not talking about mudding plants in or seeds in, nothing like that. But what we're saying is if the soil conditions are favorable, for planting, don't really be overly concerned with some cooler soil temperatures, and then consider using these seed treatments that'll provide this protection for some of the fungal organisms and pests that are generally responsible for harming early planted soybeans.
I'm Anna Hostert, reporting for the Iowa Agribusiness Radio Network, joined here today by Mark Storr, Technical Services Representative with BASF for Iowa. We'll be back on Week in Ag Matters.
Data is data is data. Unless you work with FS, then your data comes with expert insight. Tapping into a wide range of technologies through MyField, your FS crop specialist evaluates trial data from your farm, along with only the most qualified aggregated data that reveals trends in your area. With MyField, your FS crop specialist delivers the insights you need to build your ROI. Learn how results from FS nitrogen trials can be applied to your farm at fsmyfield.com. FS, bringing you what's next.
Welcome back to this weekend's edition of Weekend Ag Matters. So, late last week, President Donald Trump requested that China remove tariffs from certain agricultural products, such as beef, soybeans, and a couple different others. And the reason that he made this request was because negotiations between the United States and China have been progressing fairly well within the past month. As you know, we didn't reach that March 1st deadline where we had hoped to see at least a rough draft of the agreement. That doesn't mean that there isn't a rough draft out there, but the United States was going to implement additional tariffs on Chinese goods, and we would have expected the same thing from China, for them to implement more tariffs on American goods. Thankfully, President Donald Trump said that he would refrain from implementing additional tariffs on Chinese goods, and China reacted the same way. So that was really good. No more tariffs than what we already have on American and Chinese goods. But President Trump made this request hoping to receive a good faith gesture from China and just to see from them, you know, they agree that both countries are getting what they want out of these talks. And so that happened late last week. Earlier this week, U.S. Secretary of State Mike Pompeo visited Iowans. First, he stopped at Johnston High School to talk to FFA members, and then later in the evening, he spoke to Iowa farmers at the World Food Prize Hall of Laureates here in downtown Des Moines. Iowa farmers were hoping to hear that there was some kind of draft between the United States and China in preparations to resolve this tit-for-tat trade war that's been going on for several months now. Unfortunately, that announcement wasn't made at the ceremony, but here's what Secretary Pompeo had to say about the current situation between the United States and China.
Unfortunately, China has taken a different approach. It has a state-led set of economic practices that threaten the health of the American agriculture industry that you've all worked so hard to develop. When we hear the stories of China stealing sensitive technologies, we often think of the technology powers that powers our fighter jets, our smartphones, and our medical devices. But Americans should know that China has targeted intellectual property and technology essential to farming, too.
You know, Pompeo noted several examples of theft in agriculture, such as the Chinese nationals' attempt to steal genetically modified corn from major seed companies. He also noted that every time there's a theft, it eats away at the history of the industries upon which you, your children, and grandchildren depend upon, which is why President Trump has decided to take such action. Secretary Pompeo is very confident that President Trump's low-tax regulation-cutting agenda is ensuring that the ag industry, along with other sectors of our economy, have room to continue to grow and thrive. Pompeo also points out that this task is very difficult.
And as we see so often in socialist countries, the prevalence of corruption in China's state-commanded economy frequently allows this kind of fraud to go undetected and almost always unpunished. And even when it's uncovered, the incentive to cheat remains unchanged.
All in all, Secretary Pompeo believes change lies on the horizon, and here's his final statement that he left with Iowa farmers.
The good news is this. Help is on the way. American producers and Chinese consumers will both be better off. The outcome of President Trump's trade negotiations currently underway will pay dividends for people in each of our two countries. The president is taking a very hard line on stopping the theft of intellectual property. For ag producers, President Trump is fighting to level the playing field to which I earlier referred so that we'll be greater market access for each of them. This is great news. But opening up markets for new businesses isn't just a pet project related to China. It's one of the core missions of the State Department, which I lead, and it has been for more than 200 years. But we're doing so today with a renewed focus.
So that was an update on what's going on the U.S.-China trade front. There's also things still happening between the United States, Mexico, and Canada. And Dustin actually produced a piece on that this week, kind of talking about where we're at in regards to actually getting that agreement solidified. So if you think back to November, all three countries signed the agreement. Now we're waiting for all three legislative bodies to ratify the agreement. But it looks like there might be some political hurdles that are preventing this legislation from finally getting ratified. Agriculture Secretary Sonny Perdue made some comments on this, as well as U.S. Trade Ambassador Robert Lighthizer and Iowa Senator Chuck Grassley. So I really encourage you to go to our website, which is iowaagnet.com, to view that story that Dustin put together. I'll even give you the title here. It's USMCA Needed Soon, but faces bipartisan hurdles. Really encourage you to read over that piece, really solid piece, and listen to the comments made by some of these key influencers. In the meantime, we'll make sure to keep you up to date on what's going on the trade front, whether it's between the U.S. and China, United States, Mexico, and Canada, United States and Japan, whatever country. We'll make sure to keep you updated here on Weekend Ag Matters. So I'm going to shift it over, and we'll be right back after this quick break.
Welcome back to Weekend Ag Matters on the Iowa Agribusiness Radio Network.
Now we're at the U.S. Soybean Export Council, where I am talking with CEO Jim Sutter. Jim, thank you for taking a few minutes to talk with us here.
Dustin, it's my pleasure. Great to see you here this morning.
As we look into 2019, what are we looking at?
Well, we're looking at a picture of optimism, I would say. You know, we always, I think, have to think about the big picture. The global demand for U.S. for soy in general is certainly growing. Every year we see more and more people around the world, their income improving, they want to improve their diets, and soy is a great way for them to do that. It contains the protein component, which feeds all different kinds of livestock, whether it's chickens or fish or pigs. Can also be consumed directly by humans, and then it contains the oil aspect as well. And as people improve their economic situation in life, that's what they want to do, is have more protein and have more cooking oil.
You know, it's economy that is really driving this demand. I mean, the people are able to start affording more in some of these countries that we never really thought about.
Oh, that's exactly right. And, you know, right now I know it's a tough time for farmers, and we're looking at a record carryout level because of the disruption in trade with China. So it's very easy to lose sight of the fact that we are in a growth business and we see this growing demand. And it wasn't very many years ago that many people around the world were talking about how are we going to have enough to feed people in the future. Well, today that seems like a distant memory and seems like somebody didn't know what they were thinking of when they said that. But I think all the numbers that I look at shows we continue to be in this growth business. Every year the world is consuming, you know, 10 to 20 million tons more soy. So the U.S. last year produced 120, you know, so a good chunk of what we produce every year in the U.S. is actually needed to feed the growth in demand. Now, this year we have a problem with the trade war with China. You know, last year in July of 2018, China put retaliatory tariffs on U.S. soybeans going into that market. And they did it because soy's been such a, you know, China's been such an important market for soy. It's an important thing for them to import, and they were great customers of ours, but we've had this big trade disruption. So we've been working hard trying to find other markets for our U.S. soy. Shipments to other destinations, soybean exports to non-China destinations this marketing year are up 72% versus where they were last year. All soy exports to other destinations are up 55%. So we've seen good growth, but not enough to offset China, and especially because China was always a front-end loaded demand. So we expect through over the course of the year, if we continue to see these pretty good exports to other destinations, we may come close in terms of total exports, especially lately we've seen some more purchases from China, at least on paper that we're going to see that. So that's why I say we have some optimism. I see this demand for long-term growth, and I see some hopefully light at the end of the tunnel in terms of short-term exports.
You know, and you talk about optimism, too. I mean, we're hearing some things that are getting us really optimistic, but yet cautious on that China front. Hopefully, maybe by the end of the month, we could see the presidents of both countries sit down and maybe finally hash this thing out. And I know a lot of farmers are really hopeful this could happen.
Well, I'm as hopeful as the farmers are. We continue to hear real good things in terms of the agriculture part of the negotiations. And I think our negotiators have been working very hard. There was a trip by a group of people from USDA and USTR to China in April of 2018, so darn near a year ago now. They started this work of having discussions with the Chinese about what was important for our farmers in terms of getting things, you know, sort of fixed, the old perennial problems we've had with China. And I think they're making good progress on that. What we continue to hear and what we know is that none of that will come to fruition unless we have a structural reform, unless we get the overarching deal done. So I share the optimism. I'm hopeful that something will happen. I think everybody realizes that both the U.S. negotiators at a high level and the Chinese negotiators, that it's best for the two countries and best for the world if we can get something put together. Hopefully that'll happen by the end of the month. The,
you know, farmers are resilient. They take this in stride like they would a weather event or anything else to just, we'll get to put our nose to the grindstone and keep going another year.
I'm actually amazed, Dustin, at how I continue to hear the optimism from farmers and the support for our government and the support for things that are going on. And it's typical of farmers being the optimists, being the people that understand that there are ups and downs, and this is a down. But as I look at the potential out there in those future markets, we've also shifted some of our resources to start doing more work in these developing markets, trying to really diversify our portfolio of destinations and make sure that, you know, 5 or 10 years down the road, we have other new markets coming on to be demand for U.S. soy.
And, you know, when we look at Brazil, Argentina, and what they're producing in South America there, I mean, are we seeing a challenge? I mean, earlier this year, we were thinking that they were going to come up with these record crops. Things are settling back a little bit due to some weather, and it happens to them just like it does us. But, I mean, what's the strategy when you're facing a market like that when you have your Brazils and your Argentinas out there?
Well, that's a great question. Quite honestly, that's one of the, I don't know whether you can call it an unintended consequence. It's certainly a consequence of the trade war. Last year, Brazil saw a great market last summer when our U.S. soy was, had fallen $2 a bushel and we didn't have a home for our exports like we were thinking we would normally have China. Brazil was reaping the benefits of that. And so the consequence is that I think they are working hard to put more land into production. Their government seems to be more open to that, a little less concerned about deforestation problems than they were previously. So I think we are going to, you know, we've kind of awakened a competitor. So that's a concern. That's a worry. And it's one of the reasons that our strategy is to go to these other new developing markets around the world and try and help jumpstart demand growth in those markets. Because not only here in the U.S., where we know our growers like to produce soybeans and we've seen, you know, continued growth in our crops year over year, we know other people around the world also want to produce soy. Now, so that's plenty of supply coming on the market. We need to do what we can to try and help grow demand all around the world.
You know, maybe this is putting you on the spot, too, but I'm also concerned, you know, you're talking about export markets and it's getting that product to the ports and stuff, and infrastructure is one of those big deals. Brazil is investing money into their infrastructure, which is going to make them more competitive, and we have an infrastructure that does need some help and needs some investment. I mean, is that another push that you guys are making with the government as well?
It certainly is. It's something, you know, so on the one hand, we go out and tell people around the world that the U.S. has the best export infrastructure of anybody, and we truly believe that. But it's something that we need to continue to invest in. We can't take it for granted. It's like on any farm. You know, you may have the best equipment today, but if you don't take care of it and don't invest in it, you know, 5 or 10 years down the road, you will no longer have the best equipment of anybody. So we need to continue to do that. We work very closely with our counterparts, the American Soybean Association, that is really the political arm of the soy family, if you will. And they do a lot of work in Washington, D.C., to try and make sure that our government understands the need to be making those investments in our infrastructure.
All right, Jim, as we wrap up, any final thoughts to share with our producers in Iowa?
I guess I'd just like to say one thing. You know, we hear more and more talk about sustainability, and sustainability is something that I think sometimes it can be a fearful or frightening to farmers in particular because they think, oh, somebody's going to come tell me what I should be doing on my farm. And I just want to thank the farmers for farming in such a very good way that they do, following the good conservation practices that USDA has helped to put in practice, and then many, many investments from our farmers, because we really have great sustainable messaging that we can use around the world. So we believe that in the area of sustainability, we have a competitive advantage, and it's because of the hard work that our farmers do. So thanks to all the farmers that are listening for being such sustainable soybean producers.
All right. Well, Jim, I thank you very much for taking the time to visit with us here this morning.
Thank you, Dustin. I appreciate it.
That's Jim Sutter, Chief Executive Officer of the U.S. Soybean Export Council.
And that's going to put the wraps on this week's edition of Weekend Ag Matters. Ann and I thank you very much for taking the time to join us. We'll be back with you again next week as Ken remains indisposed, incognito, wherever in the world he is. We will be back to cover him while he enjoys some time off. Thanks for listening to Weekend Ag Matters on the Iowa Agribusiness Radio Network.